Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening in. Hey, I'm going to make enough mistakes tonight for both of us, okay, Delora? Don't worry about it. My name is Linda Mooney, and this is Other Worlds of Romance, and I'm so glad that y'all are listening in tonight. And I have with me tonight a beautiful lady that I met at a book signing in Houston. She goes by the name of D. Elise Domain, but you can call her Delora like I do. Hi, Delora. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm doing good.
And she's going to be reading tonight from, if you like paranormal gothic romances with demons, this is the book for you. It's called Dominique's Nemesis. It's book one of the Ambrosi Legacy. And she is going to be reading an excerpt from that tonight. And if you'd like to talk to Delora, you're more than welcome to call in. The number is 646-727-2932. Or if you'd like to ask her a question, and I have the chat room open, you can go into the chat room and leave your question there. Or email me, if you're sitting there on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, email me your question, linda@lindamooney.com. Now, for those of you who don't know, like I said, she is from Houston. Delora is a longtime lover of creative fiction. She learned to read with Dr. Seuss and grew up reading Sweet Valley High, James Howe, and Lois Duncan. She graduated to category romance with Harlequin and Silhouette in her teen years. Now, Delora started out writing fan fiction after her favorite fictional characters met with death and cancellation on network television. Which fan fiction, Delora?
General Hospital, Days of Our Lives.
Ah!
I'm embarrassed to say.
No. Hey, I used to write fan fiction, too. So it's
really,
yes, but she was inspired by the entertaining multi-layered storylines created by so many female romance, young adult, and television writers that she began to experiment with her own characters. Now, coupled with her own unique brand of genre-bending romantic fiction, she was able to create a whole new world within the pages of her book. See, I like that. You did what I've heard several people say, which is that you cut your teeth with fan fiction, and then after a while it was like, I want to write my own worlds and not have to follow the Bible of another show or whatever that somebody else has dictated. And I've got to give you kudos, because not many people are able to break away from that. And so good for you for doing that. Okay, let's talk about you. Now, Dominique's Nemesis is book one of the Ambrosi Legacy. What do you mean by the Ambrosi Legacy?
Well, Ambrosi is kind of this family, and it's kind of a family dynasty. But the last head of the family was when, you know, he wasn't the best leader of the family. You know, he drank, he had some marital issues, mm-hmm. and so it kind of declined under him. So the father mm-hmm. has died, and Dominique is the heir apparent, and he's reluctant because, let me just say, he didn't have a nice family life. The marriage was a disaster, and that's pretty much the aftermath of his childhood is the topic of the book. It's a family saga type book with a paranormal twist. Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. All right.
Family okay. Secrets abound.
Now, how many books were you looking into making? I mean, is this like one where you know exactly how many books you're going to have in the series, or it's one where you haven't a foggiest idea how many books it'll turn into?
No. There's going to be a finite amount of books. I don't believe in that rambling on for 15 and 20 books. There's brothers, and one brother's already married, so there's going to be mm-hmm. six to seven books.
Oh, okay.
There's going to be, there'll be 6 to 7 books, but probably no more than that.
Okay. Well, Delora, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to turn the floor over to you so you can go ahead and read us the blurb and then kind of and just then launch right on in and kind of give us an idea of where you're going to be reading from. So take it away.
Okay. Okay, the blurb. When tortured souls collide, in an unforgiving society where the hint of madness is all the damning proof men need, Dominique Ambrosi struggles to live a peaceful life, away from prying eyes and damning innuendo. Gifted with uncanny abilities, yet also cursed with the taint of madness, Dominique must walk a fine line. After the horror of his past, his fractured soul is safe only in solitude, until one day his refuge is irrevocably breached by an ethereal beauty haunted by demons of her own. He is torn between protecting himself and his brothers from exposure and persecution and following the desires of his heart. Now, the excerpt is it's toward the beginning, but it's not at the very beginning because I kind of want to give everyone a flavor for the book. So it's going to be chapter 5. You know, it's going to be based chapter 5 and a little bit of chapter 6. But it's kind of self-contained. I write in, like, scenes. So and I tried to pick something that's self-explanatory. So it's going to be one or two scenes that are basically the heroine. It's focused on her. It's going to be in her point of view. Then the hero, Dominique. And then kind of like this, the opposition, the evil, you know, part of it.
Okay.
So should I start?
Yeah, get started. I'm anxious to hear this.
Okay. Nemesis, chapter 5. Eden had taken to bathing in the evenings before dinner. Now that her voice was back and she had more color in her cheeks, she was allowed out of bed and took dinner with the doctor and his wife in the dining hall. Mr. Ambrosi did not join them. In fact, Eden had not laid eyes on him in the 3 days since she'd awakened from her ordeal. He was avoiding her, of course. The thought depressed her. She found herself longing to see him again. Each night at dinner, she bathed and dressed as best she could under the circumstances. There weren't a lot of flattering options to employ with Widow's Week. Kathleen was gracious enough to procure the proper morning attire for her. The wardrobe brimmed with black crepe and bombazine. Sitting in a steaming bath with her head lolling on the rim of the tub, Eden let her eyes drift closed. If he meant to avoid her for the duration of her stay, why didn't he simply send for the Marquess and have her removed? She was fully recovered. Even Dr. Rain ceased to treat her like a patient. You're much too thin. Do they not feed the lasses in America? Eden opened her eyes to find Dr. Rain's buxom, red-haired wife staring down at her. 'Tis no surprise you are not wed. Put some meat on those bones, and you'll be beating the lads off with a brick. Kathleen tended toward bluntness. Eden learned quickly not to take it. I haven't been at liberty to socialize much. The truth was, she'd never met a man she found more than passively interesting, even before death and mourning limited her social engagement. Her thoughts flickered to Dominique Ambrosi, until now, that is. There was something unnerving about him, and yet he still appealed to her. I know this must be a difficult time, but might I offer a word of advice? She nodded as Kathleen lowered herself eye level with Eden. Do not grieve too long. It's no healthy to dwell upon death, and they would not want that for you. The older woman went on to relay her experiences with tragedy. Settling into the steaming water, Eden bent her knees so that they stuck up out of the water and slid down to rest her neck back against the rim of the tub. Kathleen lectured about the evils and expectations of the world. Eden heard only a fraction of what she said, favoring her voice more than her words. She almost felt home again. Her mother and aunts had often attended her bath to chat, gossip, or impart cautionary advice. Agitated, Dominique paced the length of his bedchamber. He could almost smell her. 2 days had passed since she'd last occupied the room. He'd instructed the servants to discard the bedding and swab the chamber from floor to ceiling. Yet he still picked up minute remnants of her essence in the room, whenever he shimmered into the astral plane. The faint colors he first glimpsed with Kale had since blossomed into an intoxicating swirl of lavender and twirling violet, intermersed with emerging geometric patterns. Dominique felt the tug of her like a fish ensnared in a lure. He did his best to make himself scarce, but to no real end. She saturated his mind. What was she doing? How did she fare? He yearned to be near her. Unable to resist any longer, Dom shimmered into the astral plane of the universe. The astral plane did not exist in normal time and space. Just as twilight marked the hazy time between night and day, the astral marked the shadowy realm between life and afterlife. The senses, sound, smell, touch, and taste were meaningless. Mind sight defined reality. Before learning of the dangers of the astral realm, Dominique spent copious amounts of time there. The ability to disconnect from his corporal body afforded him a measure of peace he never seemed able to achieve in the physical world. He'd once lost 6 months in the astral realm. The passage of time was near impossible to quantify. There were no landmarks, no buildings, no ground, sky, water, animals, nor trees. Only an infinite many bodiless souls dotted the airless void. A year, an hour, a decade might pass in the realm that time forgot. The traveler would be unaware and in danger of being permanently disconnected from the physical world. Dominique sojourned there whenever necessary and sometimes used the realm as a rapid mode of travel, but he was careful never to linger. At the moment, Dom's jagged dance of dark and white light sought out Eden's alluring purple-violet vortex. He halted a short ways from where her essence hovered, watching the color patterns mingle in harmony with a second essence he recognized as his sister-in-law. Curious, Dom exited the astral realm and slipped into invisibility. He stood just inside her bedchamber, present in body and spirit, but not visible to either woman. Mama was afraid if we wrote to Papa's parents in London of his death, they would descend upon us and take me away. My grandparents are powerful people from what I know of them, and not at all happy to have their heir married to an American nobody. Eden paused in her oration, her hands steeled in mid-plait, and she turned her head slowly to scan the room. What is it, lass? Kathleen followed her gaze, puzzled. Nothing, I just felt a draft. Her brow furrowed as the draft sent a prickling sensation over her skin. She jerked as a disturbing notion occurred to her. What if they were no longer alone? Papa and Mama would always say that that was the reason they had made the choice to live in Boston, to avoid their controlling ways. Ironic it seems that in the end, Mama begged me to seek refuge with them. How then did you come to be with the St. James's? I could not face turning up on their doorstep begging for sympathies from two people I would not recognize if I stumbled over them. Instead, I threw myself on the mercy of Lily and Reginald. I'm nervous still. Eden's stick shivered and sunk lower in the tub. Is the water cool enough, then? Let me see what is keeping them. No, please. There is no need. Nonsense. We cannot have you catching a chew. One more idea might just finish your wee one. Allowing no further argument, Kathleen excused herself. Eden found herself alone with the unseen conjuring of her mind. It approached from the side of the bed, watching her as she drew herself into a tight ball and cowered so low that her nose hovered just above the waterline. It slowed the approach to a crawl. Why was it here? What did it want from her? The most terrifying question of all, what would it do once it reached her? Eden cringed as the presence stalked closer still. Every muscle in her body grew taut with fear and dread. Inch by inch it came, feeding off her self-emotions and pinning her to the spot. Her breath hissed, eyes wide and staring. Stiff fingers clutched the sides of the porcelain tub. When at last the thing reached the far edge of the tub, Eden opened her mouth to scream. The next instant, she felt the gentle touch of hands reaching beneath the water, fingertips fluttering against her skin. They applied a soft pressure to the soles of her feet in vague circular motion. The administrations were smooth, unhurried, and pleasant even. She rose a little, eyeing the foot in question with a disbelieving hazel gaze. Her fear dissipated. The presence pulled a little at her foot, and she complied. It must be a he, she reasoned. He set the right foot over the edge of the tub at the knee and stepped closer to grasp her left foot from beneath the water. She felt the brush of her body between her legs at the knee. language, she became aware of an odd tingling blossom in the bottom, in the pit of her stomach. Eden allowed the left leg to be lifted high on the diagonal, unperturbed by the intimate view of her person this position gave the unseen him. Could a virtuous woman be ruined by a figment of her imagination? She must be losing her mind. A sane woman had no cause to ask such questions. The fact that she conjured up a seduction-bent presence to raid her back and do wicked things to her feet was probably proof enough of escalating madness. Lulled into a sensation-seduced daze, Eden closed her eyes and slipped beneath the water's surface, lay with her torso flush against the bottom of the tub. Taking full advantage of the extra leverage, the hand slid further to knead her calf with the same soft, soothing motion. The tingling in her stomach sharpened to a vague longing for something she could not name. Her hands clutched at the sides of the tub, this time the action born of yearning, not fear. Images of herself in a similar position flashed in her mind. At first, they came as staccato flickers of her body. She was unclothed, but not in the bath, somewhere else. The second wave of images lingered longer, were clearer, like photographer's stills running one after the other to produce disjointed motion. She occupied a bed. Her pale naked skin and flaxen hair had a drastic contrast to the ink-black sheets. Her head arched backwards. Hair lay fanning the pillow. Her mouth open in a pose of sensual fusion of pleasure and pain. A dark figure loomed over her, his face hidden in shadows. His chest bare, as broad as she was now, undulated above her. His voice moaned in what could only be described as ecstasy. Eden, that voice. She recognized it even in her head. Eden shot up so fast the movement sent choppy waves splashing over the tub's edge. She sat ramrod straight, breaking contact with her unseen molester as she realized what the images likely represented and with whom. Dominant. And then she was alone. She'd sensed him. She'd known he was there the instant he'd materialized from the astral realm and cloaked himself. Amazing. Seeing Eden as he had imagined so often, languid in a scented bath, aroused him to the point of pain. Touching her was a mistake. He knew it the instant his fingertips brushed against the slight curvature behind her ankle. Temptation, once realized, only intensified. The throbbing fullness between his legs only ached more, not less. He froze when he heard the door of his music room open. He waited, watching as Ethan walked into the circle of light. Dom. His brother eyed the empty pianoforte almost as if he expected a response. But how could he? His attention darted along the black lacquered surface, following the teeny rainbows dancing in the light. Dominic, I know you're in this room somewhere. With a muffled curse, he unclipped himself. How the devil can you possibly know that? Ethan stepped onto the raised area. Dom was seated on the bench with his head bowed over the keys, sans his spectacles. He did not look up. I know because you refract light when you're invisible. The next time you have a mind to avoid me, hide in a hall of mirrors. And where did you pick up that tidbit, Kale? The good doctor smiled, proud of himself. He and I attended a lecture series a few months back. Physics is such a fascinating topic. I wonder now that I chose to study medicine. Why is he so damned anxious to explain away my abnormalities with science and natural law? Perhaps because you still think of them as abnormalities, while he thinks of them as characteristics that make you unique. He and I are in complete agreement on that front. His brother laid a reassuring hand on his shoulder as he spoke. Do not isolate yourself so much, and maybe you would see that you're just another person, born no better and certainly no worse than any other. Frustrated and angry with himself, Dominic struck the keys with a fisted jab. The brief cacophony voiced the turmoil warring between his struggle for self-preservation and the new and overwhelming desire for intimate contact. Tell me what you bloody well want and get out of here. Is it such an annoyance conversing with your own brother? Forgive me, Ethan, Dominic sighed. I'm not used to stumbling over so many people. I prefer solitude. You know that. His agitation had nothing to do with the doctor or his wife, and everything to do with a certain blonde. How the bloody hell could she both see and recognize him? First her, now Ethan, and probably Kale, too. He was beginning to feel exposed, vulnerable to crying high, in his own sanctuary. It was not my intention to intrude, but circumstances being what they were, Ethan trailed off and began anew. Actually, this might come as a relief. I came to tell you that I would be detained for several days in town, so there would be one less person to despoil your peace. Ethan, do not go. You just said you were bothered by too many people milling around your house. I would be one less. Take Kathleen and the woman with you, and there would be three less. Ignoring Dominique's almost comical spite, he continued, our patient is your patient. Our guest, then. Interloper works best, I think, Dominique said with an acid smile. Now, what is this pressing matter in town? House calls, several of whom are long-standing patients. Put them off. I cannot put them off any longer. Plus, it might interest you to know that Cale is back in town with Stephen. He swiveled around, surprise etched on his face. How do you know that? If you ever bothered to stir from your hidey hole, you would know it too. Cale sent a message this morning. Dominique had the decency to grimace before he snatched his face away. Ethan's serene expression hadn't changed in the brief moments when their eyes met. It never did. But then Ethan was one of very few people whom he occasionally allowed to see him sans his spectacles. The boy is having a rough time of it, Dominique. Among the injured was a close friend. You might consider inviting him to stay. Stephen is rash and too excitable. He could learn a thing or two from Cale, certainly more than I can teach him. He worships you. At least go see the lad. Perhaps. He made no promises. Dominique ran a clenched hand through his hair. He was still on overload since the bath earlier, and he didn't know if he could handle another incident. With Stephen, nothing ever transpired without incident. Chapter 6. Mr. Ambrosi. No sense putting on airs. Matthias will do just fine. That's what my friends call me. The other man cocked a brow, rather presumptuous. Optimism is a necessary thing in me line of work. Matthias sized up his newest off-the-books client, foreign most like. The gentleman did his level best at concealing the accent, but no dice. French, maybe. Money. The ruddy blush reeked of a soft gentleman who indulged in fine wines, rich foods, and classy whores. He guessed by the tailored lay of his waistcoat and high-kick boots that he could roll the gent right now for a couple of hundred pounds at least. The stiff posture bespoke a certain haughtiness. Probably thought himself too good to have dealings with a low-born proprietor of a paranormal asylum, the prig. And what can I do for you this here fine evening? In truth, it was an ungodly hour of the night. The sparse office area they occupied abutted a stone structure housing the inmates. A hum of activity, punctuated by the odd thump or bang, radiated from the asylum proper, belying the hour. I reckon you ain't here to pay a penny and see the freak show. Some other time, perhaps. The gentleman offered a half-smile at the notion. Intrigued, not horrified, Matthias noted. He retained total composure, even with the knowledge that the only thing protecting him from 100 lunatics, many with abnormalities, was a blotchy paint bare wall. Good. Matthias found that encouraging. The more amenable his clients were to the seedier side of life, the more willing they were to pay to distance themselves from it. I've come on a rather delicate family matter. Yeah.
Laura,
yes.
I wish you could go on, but we're running short of time.
Oh. Sorry, I'm almost done.
No, I was sitting here going, oh, I want to hear more, but I'm like the clock, and I'm like, oh, my God. We're getting short of time, and I wanted to ask you a couple questions. And we
sure.
do have a question from Julie. She said, what are Dominique's abilities? I think you mentioned
travel.
He had uncanny.
Astral travel. Astral travel is basically he's traveling in a realm where only people exist as only spirits, like your elemental form, your soul.
Mm-hmm.
So he can travel through there. Yeah. And the other one is invisibility.
So that's okay. So we got the invisibility. But now how is she able to see him?
Oh, well, you know, that's kind of a spoiler.
Oh, okay. I won't go any further than that.
There's an explanation
so,
for that, but you have to read the book.
Oh, goodness gracious and all. Now I noticed I was sitting here and I was looking at the book. You also have another book out called When Lucifer Met Calamity, which is Calamity Jones, Book 1. Give us a little bit about that book.
Okay, so this book is a lighter tone. It's kind of a romantic, like something like a romantic comedy would be like, but it's written instead of on the big screen. It's contemporary. Mm-hmm. It's written in modern times, and there's no paranormal element. I mean, the main hero's name is Lucifer, but he's not the Lucifer.
He's just a guy named Lucifer.
Yeah. And he happens to be a lawyer. There's, you know, I did that on purpose. It's supposed to be funny. But and
Lucifer is a lawyer. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. He's a lawyer, and he works for this law firm, and he meets up with one of the kind of the legal aid, legal assistant ladies who's having a problem. Basically, the problem is sexual harassment, and so it's an office-type romance, and it's a shenanigans-type thing. So
like a contemporary comedy.
Yes, yes. He's a straight arrow. He's kind of like straight-laced Ward Cleaver, and she's like a total loose cannon. And, you know, she has no boundaries, no scheme too crazy that she won't try. And so that's the nature of the conflict. It's an opposites attract, you know, romance.
Ah.
And it is, yes. Yes.
That sounds like fun. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. And just to give you a little bit of a flavor of it, I'm going to read you just this little tidbit from, not even the whole blurb because that'll take too long, but just this little tidbit.
Okay.
This will be funny. But oh, what a tangled tale that is conceived when the lady plots to mislead. Calamity's got her own set of rules, and while she's willing to give the sexy lawyer a shot, a girl's got to have a backup plan in case things go sideways, right?
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah. Wow. And all. Now, and this is also like book one of a proposed series, right?
No, it's basically going to be a trilogy. That's it, three books.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Super. That's super. Now both of these books, I just realized that, both these books are available in ebook and print.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Mhm. And they are available at Amazon, and where else are they available?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iBook, Kobo,
cool.
Smashwords. Yeah.
All right.
Every format known to man. So even if you have some obscure device, they will have it. Trust me.
Goodness gracious. Okay. Now, real quick here. I met you at a book signing in Houston, Texas, and I'm wondering where else for the listeners, where else will you be this year, or do you have any other book signings coming up?
Actually, I do. There's a book display and book signing event that I'm doing in San Antonio on October 8th. It's at the campus of my alma mater, Trinity University. That's where I finished from. They're having this signing event on October 8th. And I can go into the details, but if you go on my blog or any of the places where I have a profile on my blog, on
what is your blog address?
My blog address.
Where's your blog address?
It is theelisedomain.com.
Okay.
And the Elise is I should tell you how to spell that. Alyce and then domain domain.com. Yeah.
Super. Okay. Well,
and it'll give you all the information. All right.
That's great. And well, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And the book is called Dominique's Nemesis. It is book one of the Ambrosi Legacy. And her pen name is D, as in the initial D, Alyce,
yes.
A-L-Y-C-E, domain, D-O-M-A-I-N. And it is available. And go check this out, because this is just absolutely something very, very different. You have not read anything like this before. And it does have its funny moments, too, because the hero and the heroine, there's a little bit of friction there.
and it makes for some
very interesting interaction between the two of them. And so go get it. Don't be sure to leave a review. We authors love reviews, even if it's just to say, I liked it. That's all we need. Or if you didn't like it, something, just leave us some little notice that lets us, that kind of gives us an idea of what, of how you feel about it. So, Delora, thank you again for coming on the show. And I wish you lots of luck with this, and whatever comes out next, give me a holler. And I hope I meet see you at another book signing.
I hope so too. I really do.
And tell your mother hi for me. The woman is you guys. If you when you sit next to these two, that's entertainment in itself. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance. Thanks for listening in. Take care. Have a great week. And we'll see you again. Good night, everybody. And we're done. Hey. And all. And it was kind of funny listening. Is that a cat that got in the way?
Yes, my cat. I put him out, but, you know, at any other time he would be in the living room. Oh, my goodness. My cat.
Well,
and
I
didn't want to.
Cats and dogs are like children. That it's like when they know mom's on the phone, now's the time to bother them.
I think when I'm king and there's no one else there, he assumes I'm talking to him.
Ah.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Oh, goodness gracious. And all. Well, thank you for coming again, Delora, and I wish you lots of luck. And I'm so glad that you took me up on my offer and called in, and we can set this up. And I hope you had fun.
Oh, I did. I did. We had some weird things going on in the background. I was trying to ignore. A sign on the door saying "Do not disturb." I don't get it, but whatever.
Don't you know that signs like that is just an open invitation for people to knock and say, "Hey, you know,
dude,
what's going on?"
I know. I would have done better to not put anything.
Anyway, thanks again, and hope to be talking to you again soon. So, God bless you.
Okay.
Take care. Okay.
All right.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Night.